Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. And welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being here with us on this Tuesday afternoon. It is a delight to get to be with you. And also, we're going to do something a little different because of Pope Leo. Pope Leo has engendered an interest around the world in why did he take the name Leo? And then when you get the answer often is related to Pope Leo XIII. As a matter of fact, Pope Leo himself, Pope Leo XIV, our current pope, said that he took the name in part to connect his papacy with the papacy of Pope Leo XIII, who wrote the document Rerum Novarum, the encyclical Rerum Novarum. He also wrote 71,000 other encyclicals. I don't know how many encyclicals he wrote, but I think he has the record. I think he wrote more encyclicals than any other pope, Pope Leo XIII. But here's what we thought we would do. This is a great opportunity to look back at Rerum Novarum and the papacy of Pope Leo XIII and answer the questions about it. Because we know, okay, people know that there's that connection between the Holy Father and Pope Leo XIII. Let's take a look at Rerum Novarum and actually dig into it. And because one of the things you will hear lots of people say is, it's the foundational document. It's the first document of Catholic social teaching, which in some ways is true. It is one of the seminal documents in the history of the Catholic Church. Its impact has been extraordinary. So what is it? What is Rerum Novarum? And why would the current pope want to relate his papacy back to that document in particular? And to help us do that, we have theologian Tom Nash here with us. He's author of several books, and he's been in Catholic media for a good long time and very fine theologian. And so we said, let's take an hour and look at Catholic social teaching with Tom Nash. We'll look at Rerum Novarum with Tom Nash, and that's what we're going to do this hour. We'll get questions to him next hour. But if you'd like to kind of get a primer on Rerum Novarum and Catholic social teaching, this hour is for you. Tom Nash, thank you very much for being here with us.
Great to be with you, Cy, and the Catholic Answers audience.
Okay, so 1891, Pope Leo puts out this document, Rerum Novarum. And in some ways, I would say this: it's a little bit late, and I only mean that because it's a response to I mean that somewhat facetiously, because the church takes its time in addressing major questions. But the major questions that this document addresses began to be raised about the year 1820, so just after the Napoleonic era, we have the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. So 71 years after the dawn of the Industrial Revolution, Rerum Novarum is a fulsome, well-thought-out Catholic response to the Industrial Revolution. Is that correct?
Yeah, although you are correct that and in terms of practical application. However, in 1832, and he coined the term Rerum Novarum, that is, new things, Gregory the 16th wrote an encyclical called Mirari Vos, and in doing so, he didn't offer practical solutions, but he did address the issues of socialism and also market issues from a philosophical and theological point of view, and realizing that this problem existed. And when you have the state and you're focusing on the material well-being of man, instead of primarily seeing him as a whole person, body, soul, and the temporal order, right? That here we are in exile on earth, but that we are made for heaven. So everything that we do on earth should be ordered toward our ultimate end in God. So he hits on it first, but then it gets developed later over time. And the other thing, I was just gonna say a brief thing on socialism, that you can have a deification of the state whereby the state will take care of everything. It doesn't necessarily recognize the primacy of God. You could have a theocracy too, where the primacy, where it's might what whoever has the most power can rule might by right by might.
Yeah.
And in such a situation, Sai, you could have, for example, Islamic state such as where you have militant Islam and it's a theocracy.
Sure.
The church is always, people say the church, this is a good thing to remember, that the church, as it affirmed in Vatican I and is also throughout history, faith and reason go together. So the church is always checked by reason. And people say, you know, people, there are certain myths. I mean, it's important because otherwise the church can rule by fiat, and no, that's not what we're about.
So these documents
faith
are,
and reason.
These documents are not urging that the church be made in charge of the temporal order. The popes are not.
And the interesting thing about saying about the church and being a theocracy is that in terms of faith and reason, just consider the whole issue of the Inquisition, which happened several centuries earlier, particularly the Spanish Inquisition, that people, despite, you know, you talk about abuses, but people actually like the courts of the Inquisition better than the courts of the civil order otherwise, precisely because they were more exacting at evidence, such as, you know, trials, witches and things like that, that they thought they'd get a better shake by the church because the church was not ruled by the zeitgeist, the spirit of the age. Like, oh, everybody's a witch or something like that. No, and that was more of a Protestant problem than it was in the Catholic realm, but that you would get a fairer shake, that you would be treated better in a court that was an ecclesiastical court than in the civil court.
All right.
is an affirmation.
Well, I do want to say the reason I didn't mention Mirari Vos from Pope Gregory is I didn't know about it. So I'm very glad that you pointed that out, that there was an 1832. I didn't know that. I'm going to have to go back and look up Mirari Vos.
He wrote another encyclical, and also to say, but you're right, though, in terms of the practical application, this is where that it launches it formally, like offering, applying the principles in a concrete way.
In Rerum Novarum.
It's kind of,
yeah. Okay.
So kind of a both and.
So let's just start with what, because I think there's, you know, there's this same thing, we have this social justice stuff and social justice movement. And I think we suffer from a lack of definition often. And so if someone says the church is social teaching, people get like, well, actually you read these, you know, on Twitter and stuff, like Jesus didn't have a social teaching. Jesus taught us to love one another. So love one another, and why is the church involved in trying to structure the society and all of that? I do think sometimes they confuse it with the kind of modern social justice movements. So what is Catholic social teaching? What are the essentials of Catholic social teaching? What are we talking about when we use the phrase Catholic social teaching?
I'd like to quote from the document, The Instruction on Christian Freedom and Liberation, one of two documents that came out about liberation theology when you and I were college, post-college, 80s.
Right.
The whole liberation theology, the issue with Nicaragua and the Sandinistas, and you had priests working for the communists, Daniel Ortega, who sadly has come back to power in his later years. But that they defined it as a set of principles for reflection and criteria for judgment, and also directives for action. So a set of principles for reflection and criteria for judgment, and also directives for action, so that profound changes demanded by situations of poverty and injustice may be brought about, and in this way serve the true good of humanity. And the church makes the point that it is an expert in humanity. Why? Because it is founded by Christ. It is. It has the fullness of the truth in Revelation, and also in terms of faith and reason, the natural moral law, so that it understands man as created in his image and likeness. So it understands man's temporal well-being and what is going to be best for human flourishing, and also always keep in mind that we are made for heaven, so that if we don't do that, we might go into that whole utopia mindset, Sai, whereby, we're going to make heaven on earth, which is, you know, what communism, the worst form of Marxism, will attempt to do, the worst form of socialism, Marxism has.
Yeah.
And so, and thus, as a result, you have those things. And so the church is the expert in humanity precisely because it has been founded by God and understands man made in God's image and likeness, and thus what is man's fulfillment in terms of the temporal and also man's ultimate end.
So the church then, when it gives a social teaching, as really started to congeal with Rerum Novarum in 1891, Pope Leo XIII, what it's trying to do is apply the insights, the knowledge, the revelation, mental habits or whatnot that the church has from Christ himself and from the presence of the Holy Spirit to this new social situation. That's what you're, because I'm trying to,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, yes. And in fact, in Rerum Novarum, there's two things, the new things. One is the socialism, whereby, again, common property, not recognizing man as having a part of human flourishing is to have private property. And also, it is best for society in general, from a capitalistic standpoint, if more people own property, then you're going to have a better situation where if you do have this middle class, you have less likely to have a class envy, whereby you're going to have a communist push to topple the ruling, so-called ruling class, or, you know, wealthy owners and employers. On the other side, you can have, because of the Industrial Revolution, right, you have issues of problematic, as people are migrating to the urban areas, there are issues of children working, what they shouldn't be doing, long hours, bad working conditions, all those things, and saying, hey, man is made for God, and if you want to get good employers, that good employees, you want to recognize man is made in God's image, like this. Give him that time for rest. Don't work him 24/7 or, you know, 7 days a week. Let him do that, because good employees, as we know from any good company, will be more dedicated employees, right? And therefore, if you take into account man as not a bondsman or slave that is to be used up and discarded, but as someone who is made in God's image and likeness, and even though he may be on a lower socioeconomic status, is still an equal with you, you're going to get a better employer, you're going to get a better outcome, it's going to be better for the country, it's going to be better for everything.
We're talking with Tom Nash, theologian Tom Nash, about Rerum Novarum, and this conversation comes about because Pope Leo XIV, our current pope, has said that he looks back to Rerum Novarum and the papacy of Pope Leo XIII in responding to the Industrial Revolution as a model for how he would like the church to respond with moral force to the current revolution, which is really an information technology revolution, I suppose would be one way to say it. But it's kind of a follow-on, it's a continuation of the Industrial Revolution, but with entirely new features because of what computers can do. And so we need to respond. This is a new moral situation. There are new things that need to be responded to, and the dignity of the human person needs to be defended in that context. We'll ask Tom Nash more about that after we take a very quick break. What is Rerum Novarum? What is the Catholic social teaching? And we'll dig into the particulars of it right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
I come from a family of 16. Ryan, Michael, Levi, Caleb, Noah, Titus, Timothy, Josiah, Elijah, Becca, Emma, Bethany, Hannah, Grace, Ruth, Christiana. I was really encouraged when I was listening to your radio station, and I just think everything you were saying was absolutely true, and I just thought I should call in and let you know that, and that there's still hope out there.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Tom Nash is our guest And we wanted the theologian to help us work our way through gaining some insight into Catholic social teaching and into the document Rerum Novarum, all of this occasioned by the new curiosity there is about Catholic social teaching because Pope Leo XIV, our new Holy Father, intentionally went out of his way to connect himself to that social teaching and to say we're in a moment similar to 1891 in the sense that there's a kind of social revolution going on and the church needs to speak into that. Now, Tom, you said an interesting thing to start, that the church doesn't want to be in charge of society. The church doesn't want to run society because it's funny. I heard this, and I mentioned this on the show yesterday, this guy interviewing Cardinal Supich from Chicago on ABC or CBS News. And he was like kind of dismissive. He's like, well, what can the church do about AI, basically? How's the church going to make rules and govern and manage AI? And if I'm listening correctly to what you're saying, is that misses the point. The Pope is not saying we want to be in charge of this or we want to boss anybody around, but is saying that we want to do what Pope Leo XIII did for the Industrial Revolution. We want to play that role for the Information Revolution.
Yes, and that recognizing that part of the church's mission to make disciples of all nations is to be concerned about their temporal well-being and their temporal fulfillment, lest the church not have credibility and win people over to Christ and the gospel. And so when you talk about these things, it's not about saying, okay, we're going to have a theocracy, but rather these, because the church is an expert in humanity, that we're going to have these principles need to be recognized, that we are made in God's image and likeness, and that we must be concerned about the moral law, because if we don't, then all kinds of bad things will happen. Pornography, the abuse of people with capitalism, socialism, whether it's communism or something else, you're going to have situations where the state becomes the end, or the market becomes the end, instead of the recognizing the fact that man precedes the state, that the family precedes the state, and therefore that the family, that the state is made, the family is not made for the state, but rather the state is made for the family. Similar to how our Lord says, we are, you know, the Sabbath wasn't made for man, this man wasn't made for the Sabbath, but Sabbath for the man. Recognizing that the church, being an expert humanity founded by God, is going to lead to our temporal fulfillment, our temporal flourishing, and therefore the best situation. Because, look at it. When the church's moral teaching, and you and I know this better because when we were growing up, overall society was better. When the moral law is lived, we have situations where we have strong families, we have strong schools, we have strong morality. Because the moral law is lived well. When the moral law is rejected, it is bad for work, it is bad for society. We see, you know, you could talk about saying, hey, we don't have a world war, but if you have not recognized the reality of the devil, if you recognize the failure that there is a moral law, then you fail to see that you can have a cultural war, a social erosion, irrespective of whether you have, you know, an attack or not from another country.
Well, it seems to me that before we move off the context of Rerum Novarum, the encyclical of Pope Leo XIII in 1891, the social choice that people were making at that time essentially came down to communism, socialism, capitalism on the other side. So you got socialist communists one side, capitalism on the other side. So just a basic question, which side did the church come down on in 1891?
Well, it doesn't necessarily come down on either, although it would be for the market, but what I would call a capitalism with a conscience, a capitalism in which, as it says in number 20, it talks about what are the rights and duties of the worker, and what are the rights and duties of owners and people who have wealth, that it points out, for example, for the worker to fully and faithfully to perform the work which has been given freely and equitably upon, all right, never to injure, always to do what's right. But also, on the other hand, for the employer, for the owner, the man who has the great capital, recognizing your workers as not cogs in a machine, somebody to be used up, but rather as your equals in terms of made in God's image and likeness. And so if you want to have a good company that flourishes and grows and expands, take care of your people, and also don't be overwhelmed by greed. I kind of call it like the battle of the capital sins side, because envy, class warfare, it's like, the oppressed mess.
One side could have envy. The side that doesn't have all the money can have envy as a sin, and the side that has all the money can have greed as a sin.
And
you,
you
both
have
need
greed,
to let go of those.
Yes, because if you don't, then you are going to the greed, and you are going to provide the bad seeds that leads to the bad fruit of social uprisings. If in fact you don't have companies, a system, a culture, that an economy that recognizes the good of each individual, as well as that they're flourishing, that taking care of them is going to make for a healthy company. If it's all about greed, well, hey, it's going to be short-lived, because you will grind them down, and you will eventually have a company that's not going to be as profitable and as enduring, precisely because it hasn't taken into account the dignity of the human worker, the dignity that he, even though he is not the wealthy owner and doesn't have the capital, he's making sure that your company is working well, and happy workers are productive workers. You want to do that. So not only from a temporal standpoint in terms of, hey, it's good business, but recognizing that they are made in the image and likeness of God. So clearly the church is on the side of a market, but not a market that's laissez-faire in the sense of no morality or, greed is the overriding concern. And if greed becomes the overriding concern, you will lead to social uprising in a negative way. But the beautiful thing about the church in responding to socialism size is, hey, we are all made in God's image and likeness. You shouldn't pit the classes against each other. And the state is not the means to do, because, if you have the right to property, which Rerum Novarum clearly refers as inviolable, the right to pursue that property, then as a result of that, it gives more and more people a stake in society. And as a result, you have a more stable society because you have more stakeholders. It's good for the companies. It's good for the economy in general, and therefore good for any company who's really concerned about not greed primarily. Profit motive is a good thing. That's how capitalism works. But realizing that profit is not the God, God is God.
Okay. This is the context. And I sometimes feel like, Tom, Catholic social teaching is like people treat it as if what the Catholic Church is giving in its social teaching is the answer to our social ills. But like you could institute it as a program and it would be the answer. But it's not separate from faith. It's not like we came up with this. You got capitalism, you got Marxism, you got fascism, but here's the Catholic program. That's not what Catholic social teaching is. Catholic social teaching won't work if you separate it from actual living faith in Jesus Christ. That's not what it is.
Exactly. I mean, it's a practical application of immutable moral principles about man, about what is good. And it talks about, for example, that we have a Christian duty to be mindful of others. All right. And now only in the case of a grave situation could there be an intervention such as people are starving. Could you take something from someone to help that person? But in general, he says it's a matter of Christian duty as opposed to an imposition by the state. And therefore, that if we don't live that Christian duty, you're going to be much more susceptible for state interventions. When the family is strong, society is strong, the culture is strong. When the family is not, it's like for example, you can talk about people saying, hey, you need to pay all these people a living wage. Well, yes, that's true, Cy, but you can't expect to have situations where unskilled labor, who might be a single parent, are being paid inflated wages to meet their situation, even though that's not what the market bears. On the other hand, we want to help and support those people, not with overreaching government, big state, but we want to have mechanisms that are going to improve the promotion of the family, the promotion of ethics, because that's how you get a stable society. If you can't look for the state to try to compensate for moral failure.
It's not just that.
To aid and abet it.
Right. Okay, so let me ask you this. You said that the church affirmed the right to private property. What did it say about labor unions in Rerum Novarum?
Sure. Then it recognizes that they are good, you know, not when they are looking to aggrandize themselves, right? Whereby they are not recognizing the dignity of the human person and are gravitating towards just financial considerations of man and supporting political candidates who, well, might be concerned about their wages, but are not concerned about human development altogether, including the rights to the unborn, the recognition that there is such a thing as a family, that it is a husband and wife. When you get unions that are there to support the family, we're going to see it. And when we see things other than that side, I hear the music coming, you get erosion of society, and the state cannot fulfill it, and the state imposes itself to try to rectify it, and it gets worse.
Yeah, so when the union is for the worker and the family, it's one thing. When it's for this kind of redefinition of the family and all that, then we're in a problem. We'll be right back with more on Rerum Novarum with Tom Nash on Catholic Answers Live. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Father Jeff Kirby, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme, Go Make Disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, talking with Tom Nash about Rerum Novarum and Pope Leo XIII. There's one of the wonderful things about the occasion of the new papacy is, like Chris Check was saying yesterday, more people watched that conclave and paid attention to it than any conclave in the history of the church. And there's this moment of attention on the Catholic Church, and then Pope Leo gets to decide how he uses that moment. And in many ways, I have to say, I've already been kind of laudatory of Pope Leo because I thought his opening emphasis on the peace of Christ is just exactly what the world needs to hear. His emphasis on unity among Christians is exactly what we Christians need to hear. And his reference, his choice of the name Leo and his reference to the church's response to the Industrial Revolution as a kind of model for how the church needs to respond to the information technology, computer revolution, AI revolution that we're currently in the midst of and maybe in the early stages of. I don't know. It does seem to be that I don't think this is one of those things that's getting overhyped. I think some people are misplaced in what they're concerned about. Like the AI is not going to suddenly become sentient and become a creature comparable to the human being. That's not going to happen. But that doesn't mean it can't do all kinds of amazing things. You know, the railroad never became sentient, but the railroad totally transformed society. So that doesn't mean that AI can't do that. And I think we are in the midst of seeing that. So we thought, well, okay, if Pope Leo is asking us to look at Rerum Novarum, look at the papacy of Pope Leo XIII, draw from the church's moral leadership in helping the world negotiate the Industrial Revolution. And I honestly don't think the definitive text has been written on this. I don't think you could exaggerate how important the church's role was in keeping the world human through a period that was very dehumanizing. I'm not saying the church had overwhelming success. I'm not saying there wasn't great dehumanization in the rise of industrial societies, highly urbanized industrial societies. It is a dehumanizing experience for many, many people and continues to be. But without the church, I just don't think you would have had a chance for the world to remember, look, society is for humans, not humans. The state, the economy, these are for humans. These are not humans are not made just to be cogs of the state or in the economic machinery. Nothing that has stood for humanity in the face of this, the potential for great dehumanization like the Catholic Church. There's just, look around. There's nothing that has contributed like the Catholic Church did. So Leo is saying, let's use that model to help the church, to help people remember what it is to be a human being in a potentially even more dehumanizing era that is coming. So we're talking with Tom Nash about that. How would you think of that summary of our situation, Tom?
I think it's good, and particularly what you said about unity. His motto is, in the one, we are one. So it points back to Jesus Christ as our founder. Now, whether one is Catholic or Christian otherwise or whatever, it's a reminder that we are made in the image and likeness of God and that we have our fulfillment in Jesus Christ. By the way, people can get Rerum Novarum, just look it up online.
Yeah.
And number 20 is a great thing about the responsibility of owners, responsibility of the owners and employers versus the responsibility of the workers. And again, that the state, we don't want to be beholden to the state like, oh, we no, man has been given a free will by God and to flourish. And if we don't recognize that, you're going to have problems. And they therefore become dependent on the state instead of a servant advancing the good of the state and the good of people in general. A big thing people, you mentioned about with the church, people can say, oh, look at this church person in history. Yeah, there are stumbling blocks of people, popes, priests, whoever, who have not acted well. But as far as the basics of what the church and when it is lived, not a betrayal of the mission, but when the church is teaching, the mission is lived, what happens as Rerum Novarum, Leo XIII points out, I love this guy, he says, look at the early church when the church was looked down as, poor and destitute, but over time and despite persecution on and off from that pagan Roman Empire, by the way, we see in the early on the church is born into the Roman Empire. They understand that the state is not the end all and the be all, but that we see that the church converts the Roman Empire, right? And it wins over the wealthy classes, wins over the powerful. And then when the Roman Empire falls in 451, it is the church which survives and continues for 2,000 years precisely because it is Jesus Christ who founded it and sustains it, that the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And as we see as well, that the church, because of Christ, has the means by which that holy life is to be lived, the sacraments, the recourse to prayer. Because you look at, and the church is living it. When the mission of the church is lived, look at the institutions, the hospitals, the religious orders, and the so-called dark age, how the Benedictines, the monastery becomes a fertile ground by which to revive society, to resurrect in Christ, properly understood, when things have gone astray. It's a real test when the Roman Empire, and by the way, look at Attila the Hun, and not to go off too much, but
that was Pope Leo the First.
That he takes out the Roman Empire, but somehow he doesn't destroy the church. And people say, oh, some of the things about myth that he saw two angels, St. Michael and whoever there. But somehow that this man is seemingly poor, you know, how many divisions does the Pope have? A rather omnipotent army of one with a celestial army of saints. And so we see that the church survives where, as I like how Cardinal George said back, I think it was when Benedict was elected, where is Caesar now?
Yeah.
You know, that the great sea. And so we see that the church works, that the mission of the church, that the church is committed, the church lives, provides what it says it was with the sacraments and the other grace, and that you see the lives of the saints. You see people who are committed to taking poverty, chastity, obedience, committed to and transforming society through universities, yeah, through hospitals, through education. It's committed toward the flourishing of man. And how do you do it? Mother Teresa, if it were the power of positive thinking, I'm sorry, it's like, gee, yeah, Mother, great. You're pretty charismatic, but I'm getting out of Calcutta because I don't see the transformation of society. No, but they in fact stay with Mother Teresa all this, and they transform that society because people are dying with dignity. They are coming in touch with the reality that they are made in God's image and likeness.
Tom,
and it is, and that's why this is how we see the
You get
the
fired up about even, the Catholic Church, man. You get fired up about the Catholic Church's contribution.
The good thing, though, is, size, we can see that in, you know, back in the Depression, the church keeps society together precisely because the family is strong, the moral law is strong. And yes, things are difficult, but yeah, you know, that the church has the answer and keeps it together. And when we get too fat, right, and we say, oh, now we got Western capitalism in Poland and other places, then we can become thinking we're self-sufficient, and we end up alienating ourselves and eroding society in a different way. So
I have to say, when you recommend that people read the encyclical, the older timey popes were merciful in the word count of their encyclicals. It's, I just looked it up. It's 14,000. It's just, yeah, a little over 14,000 words. I just looked up a Pope, this is not to pick on Pope Francis. John Paul did the same thing. Benedict, yeah, did the same thing. They write these 40,000-50,000 word encyclicals, and I'm sorry, those are not going to be read by the average Catholic. But this is one of the nice things about Pope Leo. You can go get Raymond of Arm on your computer, and in a few hours, you'll be done with the entire document, one of the greatest documents in the history of the church. So I just wanted to say that, Tom, because I think we've gotten in the, yes, habit of teaching people not to read encyclicals because these popes just won't stop. I'm not picking on Francis. All of these modern popes since Paul VI, they just won't stop and make it a readable document for people. So
less is more.
Less
as
is
we
more.
Know as writers,
yes, less
and,
is
and,
more.
And that, yeah, and in the process of brevity, you will get distillation.
And all that, three of our last popes are guilty of it. And I don't want to say guilty.
Although,
but
yeah, John Paul, I mean, depending on the document, and the Compendium of Social Doctrine is particularly big. But what I say to you, say, read that document, Rerum Novarum, and make notes, print it out, and then make notes on it, and read it prayerfully. And therefore, you see the bigger picture instead of saying, oh, what has the church got to say to our thing, you know, the profit motive. Well, look at the church with this multicultural, multi-ethnic, and it's about getting people in a much bigger situation than maybe making cars, General Motors, from my native Detroit. And yet it's been around for 2,000 years, and it is across all countries. And it's a much bigger project to get people across ethnicities, across cultures, across languages, to be buying into something about moral life than it is to simply, can we get a car that helps people get from one place to another? Very important and not an easy thing to do. I don't want to understand.
But the church's mission is harder.
The church has done it. The church's mission is harder, and that it continues after 2,000 years. It's like, wow, there's something to be learned here. Look deeply, people, because this points to the divine foundation and sustenance of the Catholic Church. That's why we're in business. If it were merely a human project, we would have been about business. We would have been out of business, consigned to the dustbins of history centuries ago, not only because of persecutions from without, beginning with the Roman Empire, but also, sadly, periodic scandals from within, the,
yeah,
less than holy
periodic
aspects of our fallen humanity.
Tom Nash, not just a theologian, a fanboy for the Catholic Church, but we're going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to dig. I'm going to give you very specific questions about the themes of Rerum Novarum. So we're taking a look at Rerum Novarum, the 1891 document from Pope Leo XIII that Pope Leo XIV has told us he wants us to refer to as we consider the church's role going forward and his own role as the vicar of the church. We'll continue with that conversation with Tom Nash right after this.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Turn to Mary, the Mother of God, for help bearing witness to the gift of life with the National Life Rosary. Designed exclusively for EWTN, the unique centerpiece and crucifix represent the reality that all life is sacred and begins at conception. Help build a culture of life with the National Life Rosary. Available now at EWTNRC.com. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. You've heard in the media the discussion of Pope Leo XIII and Rerum Novarum, and many people are curious about it, so we're taking an hour to talk about it with Tom Nash. It's in the media because Pope Leo XIV has made reference to it in his own choice of his name. The world is clearly in an accelerated time of transition. There's no question about that. We are having trouble dealing with that when we see what's happening with young people, with the confusion in the world, not just the confusion, but also the depression and anxiety that are connected with social media and just screen time. You just can't. And then the changes to people's work and even the what will we do for jobs if the robots can do all the jobs? And I'm convinced personally that all that's coming. It's not an exaggeration to say this is that we are in the moment of the most heightened period of transition in the history of the world, and I'm looking forward to a robot doing my dishes. I'm not against that, but we have to find where is the human in all of this, and how do we not make the whole thing an assault on the dignity of the human being? So let me ask you about work specifically. What does Rerum Novarum say about work? Wouldn't it be just great if none of us have to work anymore?
Well, God has given us work. Now, we know after the fall of Adam and Eve that work becomes a difficulty because of our fallen nature and the impact on our lives here on Earth, the toil that goes along with carrying out our duties. But work is something that is given by God to man to fulfill himself, to cultivate also. What is the basic cell of society? Not the state, but the family. And it is through the family, each and every family, but yet in solidarity in communities within the larger church, etc., that they are basic cells working together with human dignity and making choices in conformity or should be in conformity to the moral law. And work is the means by which they are able to do that. And work is the means by which they are able to provide for their family, to fulfill their dignity. You know, instead of looking at inequality, some people have greater skills in terms of management and accruing wealth, but other people might be good with, trades, like electrician or this and that. Instead of looking at the variation or the complementarity, looking at it as gifts of various people have in society, you don't look at it as inequality, but rather that God has blessed people with different gifts, and together we can make a great society working together and recognize the dignity of all of us.
All right, so let's take that topic of dignity then. If that's what it had to say about work, one of the themes of Catholic social teaching is dignity. What is human dignity? What does the Church mean? Because I'll be honest with you, a lot of people say, you know what? My dignity means I should get to do whatever I want. People are complaining about a new law they have in Florida where they're trying to protect minors from being exposed to pornography, and it's making it harder for adults to get their pornography. Well, what about my dignity? I should be able to get my pornography as easy as I can. What is that? What the Church is arguing for?
Oh, The church is arguing for pornography for sure. And if the effects of pornography on marriages, on kids, etc., it's no doubt that it ain't good. It fuels human trafficking. You know, I remember somebody saying, oh, it does not. It's like, well, they recognized, I remember the thing on ABC and recognized that, because pornography creates a culture where you want to live it out, where you want to be satisfied concretely instead of just for the images. And pornography does that in one sense, but human trafficking makes it even more concrete. So we have a human slavery that is greater and worse in some ways than slavery in the past, precisely because we are objectifying humanity. So to think that any of these do whatever we want is going to fulfill us as if there's not a moral law. We recognize the law in terms of, right, traffic, traffic lights, et cetera, other things. We recognize the law, but we don't want to, when it comes to our personal life, no, stop. Well, sorry, people, but yes, we are. And part of the human dignity is that we're made in God's image and likeness. There are certain moral laws that if we do not fulfill them, they are substantiated at our expense. As the saying goes, God will always forgive for those who repent. Man will sometimes forgive because he has a fallen nature. Nature will never forgive because it doesn't have the power to forgive. And if you violate nature, you will have the expense, whether it's sexually transmitted diseases, whether it's selfishness that alienates you from other people. There are these things that there is a moral law that needs to be reminded in how we conduct our business, how we conduct society, and therefore that the state doesn't become greater than man, because when the for example, in socialism, particularly in communism, it tries to replace the family, right? That it even tries
certainly
to undermine,
yeah.
It tried to marriage. And so whatever they do, they, you know, legalized abortion under communist Russia. You can have children, kind of like Planned Parenthood, but we'll educate them and we'll do it at your expense. That's what communism does, of course. We have that in a different way now where we have government imposed. I don't like to say public because people can choose if that's where they want to send their kids, send them to public school. But government imposed schools, and then we get in all this other stuff about sex, that, and other things now.
Like here in California.
You can have rebelling because people are saying, wait a second, why are you saying my kid just because he's a certain race is a problem? Or, you know, what about this transgender and we're going to have people, boys and girls, bathrooms? It's almost like saying, you know, the devil overplays his hand. And there's a pushback. So I think it's a reminder of the dignity of man that we are made in God's image and likeness, and therefore there are moral laws that if we ignore them or flout them, it will be at our personal and corporate societal expense.
So I'm stepping off of Reverend Navarm for a second. Do you think that Pope Leo XIV, from what he said, sees artificial intelligence as a threat to human dignity, or maybe as carrying with it threats to, maybe it's not a threat in itself, but carrying with it threats to human dignity?
Yeah, and like you say, you know, we're going to have potentially, what are these robots? I remember you and I were younger. There was Westworld with Yul Brynner was in, if I don't remember that movie from the 70s.
I always think of Rosie.
All right, well,
do you know who I'm talking about, Rosie the robot? Do you know who that is?
I'm trying to remember.
It's George Jetson's robot.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah. She served them well. And kind of had a human, quote unquote, bad. But in the TV show or the movie, things go haywire and people are looking at what happens. You know, all these people, oh, they're just robots and we can. But then they go haywire. People start shooting the quote unquote, some bad stuff too with robots to fulfill people's lascivious desires. It all goes haywire. And so I think what Pope Leo XIV has recognized that in the wrong hands, whether by a socialist communist state or by people who are just interested in greed, right, one way or another, the capital sins of envy versus greed, that who knows what might happen, because you can harness these powers to do terrible things. In their hands, and so you could marginalize man even more. It's like, I don't care. We've got our things. We're making profits, and so what? And if you get out of line, we'll kill you, right? Or you should be thankful that we're keeping you in existence. I mean, that sounds like a worst case scenario, but I'm just saying, in the wrong hands, AI can be particularly destructive, and we see it too with the internet and with, you mentioned pornography, OnlyFans, only that kind of thing, OnlyFans, other kind of garbage. It's all, it's capitalism.
Don't do advertisements. Don't do advertisements for these people.
No, I'm saying no. I'm not doing.
I know.
No, I'm saying that this is what happens with the evil. Yeah. Yeah, no. Of course, you don't patronize pornography of any sort. Which,
well,
by
let me
the
ask
way,
you about two other words that are big in Rerum Novarum.
Yeah.
Solidarity, or at least in Catholic social teaching. I actually can't remember if these are in Rerum Novarum. But while we're talking about Catholic social teaching, people are constantly talking about, Catholics are, solidarity and subsidiarity. So what do these words mean?
Because we are all made in God's image and likeness. We are our brother's keeper in a sense that, you know, we need to.
So which one is that?
Which one is
solidarity
that
or subsidiarity?
That would be solidarity, first of all, that in terms of we as humans must recognize that we are interdependent in terms of made in God's image and likeness, and we should be concerned about the other, if for no other reason that the state might reach its arms in if when you have such a erosion of society and people will look to the state as their savior, right, to provide material sustenance, etc., because things have gotten so bad. Subsidiarity, so solidarity is recognizing that we are interdependent as humans, that we're not just isolated individuals, that we have, there's such a thing as the common good that we should be concerned about, not a common good that tramples on individual rights, but a common good that recognizes because we are made in God's image and likeness, because we are in a society to get together, we recognize the existence of traffic laws and other laws. We need to recognize the basic moral law if we are going to have true fulfillment. And if you don't, you will have one way or the other, the greed or the envy coming in from capitalism, unchecked capitalism, capitalism without a conscience, as they say, or with socialism. So when you do that, if you're going to say anything, the church is certainly more toward capitalism, but a capitalism that recognizes the dignity of the worker and is not serving as profit as the end all and be all.
So what's
and subsidiarity?
Subsidiarity.
Yeah, the subsidiarity is that recognizing, no, not the state, but that things are best done on the local level where people who are affected are going to be concerned, are going to be most impacted. And that's why we say, hey, not necessarily national schools, but let that money go to the states so that they can choose how to use their money. Or better yet, how about taxpayer rights, whereby, no, not vouchers, but because we're taxpayer rights and therefore we should have a say in how our educational monies are used, that parents get to choose the schools. The parents, you know, instead of looking as the state and the government as the overseer and the elite who knows best about education, recognizing parents who are the first educators of their children should be recognized, and therefore that it's not a question of funding religious purposes, but rather taxpayer recognizing the rights of taxpayers, and therefore if those taxpayers, in exercising their rights as taxpayers, choose to send their kid to a religious school, that's their right as a taxpayer. It is not the direct funding of Catholic schools.
It's against centralized control.
Precisely. Against the centralized control, whether it is the government in terms of providing for the material well-being or as well as the education. This is what happens as you see in communist Russia. We're going to take care of the kids. We're going to send them to school. And, oh, by the way, your husband and wife, you know,
you don't matter.
Don't think you are. Yeah, you aren't some cell of society. No, you work for the state. You are a cog of the state. And don't think of you. And that's why the church was so opposed in communism, precisely because it said, no, man has dignity. Man is made in God's image and likeness. The family is the basic cell of society. It precedes the state, and therefore it must be respected if man is to fulfill his temporal well-being, order towards his final end of heaven, and instead of thinking that we're going to get a utopia, which is only going to destroy man.
I'm sorry that the main vocabulary word that I wanted to get to was the common good, and I've left you only about 60 seconds to tell me, from the Catholic perspective, what does the common good mean, and why is it important that we adhere to the common good?
Yeah, common good is for our common well-being, recognizing that when we are concerned about the rights of all and the dignity of every human person, that society will be best served. When we fail to see that, when we get into a class warfare, or when you create a class warfare because you are not recognizing the human dignity of lower, less powerful people, then you're going to have problems. So the common good is to recognize that we are all made in God's image and likeness. We should all be concerned about each other, but without the state imposing a solution such as through socialism, communism, as the worst form of socialism. On the other hand, not having a world whereby it's driven by profit above all else, and where man is a cog, and therefore you are undermining man and his fulfillment otherwise. Recognizing we're all interdependent, both here in our communities, as a nation, as the world.
Tom Nash, our guest, we're going to get into some questions next hour. Rerum Novarum, you can just if you type Rerum Novarum text into your computer, it'll take you right to the Vatican website where you can read Rerum Novarum. You can print it out if you like to read that way. You can read it on the computer screen if you like to read that way. And it's not going to wear you out. It's not one of these contemporary encyclicals that's basically the length of War and Peace. It's a readable document. It's 14,000 words. That's like a couple of articles, a couple of magazine articles back to back. That's how long that is. Check it out. Be right back with more Tom Nash on Catholic Answers Live.